Hello and welcome to Cloud Cover. Today I'm joined by Abhishek.
Hi.
Would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself? You're a common guest on this show.
Yes, I can say now I am a frequent visitor. I'm Abhishek Lal. I'm a program manager with Windows Azure. I work on some of the messaging related features, queues, topics, PubSub. And I'm here to talk about Service Bus new features in SDK 2.0.
And Nate sends his apologies. He actually was walking down the street and tripped on a gutter and broke his fall with his teeth. So he's in having dentist repairs, and hopefully he'll be back next week. But today we're going to talk about Service Bus.
Yes.
But before that, let's do some of the news.
Cool.
So what have we got there, Abhishek? So from the Windows Azure blog,
we've got designing great cloud applications. That's right. Always a good thing.
So this one, the Windows Azure Cat team has actually come back with a whole bunch of reusable components that you guys can utilize when you're building out your solutions for Windows Azure. And it goes off and demonstrates a whole bunch of best practices. So could you cut across to the code samples there?
Sure.
So on the code samples page here, you can go and download a solution, and it's got a number of Visual Studio projects that demonstrate these patterns. We've got some common core libraries, some data patterns, database patterns, some business logic patterns, patterns if you're utilizing roles, routing, SQL reporting, and tasks. So quite a lot of useful stuff there. It's something on my actual to-do list to go and have a look at, but it certainly would be valuable coming from that particular team. And the next thing we've got is
Web Matrix 3.
Awesome. So we've got a new release of Web Matrix, this time with more Windows Azure integration. So we've got integration with Windows Azure websites. So right within Web Matrix now, you can go off and deploy your applications to Windows Azure using a simple wizard. In addition, we've got remote editing in the cloud. So you can actually point Web Matrix at one of your sites and edit that page directly from within that IDE and save that change up.
Very cool.
Source control integration with Git and TFS. So three very cool new features, definitely worth looking at. I recently downloaded it and actually used it for playing around with Node, and that was pretty cool. Nice IntelliSense scenario there. So I was lacking the IntelliSense experience when I was doing stuff with Node that I'm used to in Visual Studio, say, for instance. So I used Web Matrix to go and basically get that for Node. So pretty cool. And that's basically it for the news. I think the real main things were what Scott mentioned last week, but also a bigger deep dive into what the new features in SDK 2 were for Service Bus.
Right. So Scott already mentioned some of the new updates which we had done. So I thought I'll come back today and walk through some of the code.
Okay.
And actually show you guys some of these features in action, and how they're sort of a whole set of things which help you get started faster, achieve some really, really good performance and sort of concurrency in processing messages, as well as cover some new administration scenarios in there. So I'll talk about some of the key new features, and then I'll spend a little time on the new auth model, which we put out. We have the shared access signature auth model.
So same as sort of storage?
Yes, very, very similar in terms of concepts and everything. Very very good, powerful, as well as, you know, lightweight kind of an auth model.
Okay.
And then we'll go and look at some of the new portal updates, which we have.
Did you have any VS updates for Server Explorer?
This time in Server Explorer, we don't have any key new updates. In the next release, though, we are planning a whole set of refresh.
Very cool.
So from a new feature perspective, as Scott talked about, you have the on-message programming model, which we'll look at, message browse, a new enable-disable options for entities, and then something called auto-delete on idle. So we'll look at those.
This is all new to me. I haven't actually explored, so...
Oh, perfect. Good.
So you're teaching everyone else as well as myself.
Okay, and some live feedback on how the things look. You've been using Service Bus for quite some time, so you'll see the progression in terms of what you had to write code before and what you have to write after. So the on-message programming model is directed towards replacing your receive loop. So it's one more way in which you can avoid writing a loop in which you have to control the pace, mm-hmm. you have to decide when to stop and things yep. like that.
So this is more of a push model rather than a polling model?
Yes. So you can okay. think of that as, we always had long polling. Mm-hmm. So even earlier in your receive loop, you could have said, hey, receive with the time span of 1 day.
Right.
And we would keep the connection alive for a day till the next message showed and we would send it back right away. What the on message does is it packages into a push programming model
right.
for you, the same kind of receive loop. So it's a very event-like push yep. semantics. And then it really helps you both do concurrent processing and manage sort of variable rates.
Mm-hmm.
In a receive loop, you'll sometimes put a sleep or you yep. wait for some time and things like that. Now you don't have to worry about yep. that. The message pump will take care.
Right. So this would also have implications on reducing possibly transaction cost. Because if you have a while loop that's sleeping, polling, it may be
right.
polling but not actually having anything to receive at that point in time.
Correct. So in service bus, this is a very, very good concept to talk about. In service bus, we have an operation timeout,
mm-hmm.
right? And that operation timeout is by default the duration when you call a receive of how long we keep that receive alive.
Okay.
The default value is a minute.
Okay.
So the same operation timeout applies here. If you were to write a blank receive loop where you said receive, move next kind of thing, and you had no messages,
mm-hmm.
that receive would return every 1 minute because the operation would time out.
Yep.
Now you can set the operation timeout to whatever value,
okay.
and that will apply both to your receive loop, if you have that, as well as to the on message pump.
Okay.
So by default, both the behaviors are the same. If you just moved from a receive loop to an on message pump, nothing in your billing would change.
Right.
Now you could go back and set your operation timeout to be a much mm-hmm. longer timeout. Some of the considerations there would be, let's say, how responsive do you want your app to be? When do you want some control back, when mm-hmm. you could stop the pump or things
right.
like that? If you were to set very, very long durations of timeout, that becomes harder
okay.
because now you have a pending call which you yep. can't intercept. So generally 1 minute is the default which we have. And the great thing is 1 minute translates, you know, in terms of billing cost and stuff for you. Let's say you had the whole month
mm-hmm.
and you just ran your code with on message without changing any default timeout, would be 14 cents.
Okay.
You know, if you never got a single message
yep.
in terms of that. So it's a pretty good,
yep.
you know, cost in that way. So with that, let's quickly jump into some code. Look at on message. I've got a couple of samples here. I'm going to start with a simple console app.
Mm-hmm.
So just to show you in a console what you would be doing. Let me zoom in to
yep.
this part, which is the message pump options.
You need the Visual Studio Power Tools.
Oh.
You can type a little command in to say present on, and it will increase the font size to a predefined default for
oh,
you.
Oh, beautiful.
I'll show you that after the show.
Perfect. Well, learn something new every day. So here you see in the on message options, we have autocomplete, true. This is the default. What this means is you don't even have to call message complete.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, every time you get a message, by default, we peaklock it. Then you process the message, and then you go back and call complete on it. We'll do that for you. So you just on message, you process your message, and we'll take care of calling complete.
Mm-hmm.
Here I've set concurrency to 1. You can imagine setting this to 10 or 15,
mm-hmm.
which means we'll use 15 parallel threads
right.
to then call the on message code which you have in parallel.
Okay.
And you'll be able to do concurrent processing in
right.
terms of that. And then finally, we've got a log errors sort of a method, which we hook on to the exception received.
Very cool.
Stuff. So now you can think that when our pump is running, you know, you can mm-hmm. have a lot of error conditions which can happen.
Yep.
As an example, someone goes and deletes the entity,
mm-hmm.
right, or something like that. You'd want to plug in to
right.
the log error stuff because our pump will continuously keep retrying.
Okay.
And things like that you would want to intercept and then act upon.
So that exception received, is that invoked if your on message handler throws an exception, or you're saying more
no,
underlying so trying to pull the message off
if
the
your on message handler yep. throws, so that is your yep. actual piece of code which here I've just
right.
written processing throws,
yep.
you'll have full ability to catch
okay.
it.
Yep.
If you don't catch it
mm-hmm.
and you throw it out,
okay.
then we will throw.
Okay.
Right? So we will not
yep.
do anything there. This is only our message receiver
yep.
loop, our
gotcha.
Pump. If
okay.
that receives any errors,
yep.
this is the way to listen
okay.
to those.
Great.
So with that, let's take a look of what the code looks like. I'm here creating a queue, if it doesn't exist, and then I'm going to do a send operation for a few messages and then do a on receive. All I'm doing in on receive is just printing the sequence number of the message. So when I run it here, it creates the queue, sends messages, and you can see it's received all these messages. Now it's just waiting for the press any key on the console. Now here, I'm using, let me quickly confirm, the queue which I'm using is the demo app queue. So you can see I can come here to the demo app queue and do a quick send test message. This is from our VS tooling. And notice how at that same moment it shows up where it says processing 288. Yep, I can go and do another one more.
And then
it's processing 289. Nice. So see, in a very async way where your code is now very, very simple, the thread sort of waiting, any message that shows up, it shows up to you for processing.
It's very cool.
So it really makes your job very, very simple and easy. So the next sample I want to show you is a worker role sample using the onMessage code. So quickly, with my newfound trick, let's do present on. Should make the code easier for you to see. Beautiful.
There we go.
So here, look at what your run loop now looks like. You have the same kind of auto options which you've set, autocomplete, true, concurrent call, exception, received. And then after you do the on message, all you're doing is waiting for a complete event because you want to keep your worker role running and alive. So here in this case, I just have my worker role processing messages. But if your worker role was doing other stuff, it could continue on, do its thing. And again, in a very, very sort of self-managed manner, every time you get any message, you would get called for that. So this really gives you a lot of power, and especially because it's an inline sort of function of transferring context, using that, and working out in terms of messages. So let's quickly try to look at how this goes when you run it. So I'm going to hit F5. This is going to bring up the emulator and run this code.
So basically there, the completed event is stopping your run method from returning.
Correct.
Unless you signal that as being...
Signal that as being done. Yeah. And I'll show you the code. What I'm doing, all I've done is on stop, I call the completed event in there. Because otherwise, from a contract perspective, once your run loop is complete,
it
they will
kills
just call
the process,
kills the process and will call run again. So here I've got the worker role running. It's probably initializing, doing its thing. You can see it processed almost 10 messages already. And then I can go back here, quickly bring up my Server Explorer. This is the monitoring agent doing its thing. And then I could do, again, a test message. And you can see that on my worker role, processing message 300.
Okay.
So
it
the same way, the worker role keeps running. And as and when you... you receive any messages, you will see more and more of those messages come in and apply. So a very, very good sort of improvement in terms of the programming.
Right. So it's essentially the exact same code which you run before, except for the completed event holding the run method from exiting.
Correct.
Okay.
So here we can look at that. So what I'm doing in my completed event here is that on stop, I will close my client, which is my queue client here. And this is the trigger for queueClient.close when you call it, which stops the pump.
Right.
It will cleanly exit. It will let you finish all the messages which you already have.
Yes.
And then cleanly exit the pump. And then the completed event will stop the run loop, and then you can call base.onStop. So the console app sample already on codemsdn.com, Windows Azure. I'm going to put the worker role up.
Okay. Maybe then, if you can send me the links, we'll drop them at the bottom of the show so people can grab them.
People can get those. So that should be good. A couple of things just to consider. Let's say you throw an exception, like you had talked about before, within the processing of the message. We will call message abandoned for you.
You're right.
And then we will throw the exception out. So you could have a catch block or whatever outside, and you know you can work on that. The other sort of thing to keep in mind is that as you increase concurrency of you know number of messages, you'll be locking that many more messages on your client. So that's something to keep in mind. You know, if you're doing parallel processing in that way. But otherwise, give us feedback. Let us know.
Yeah.
Right now, this doesn't work for sessions. We have not completed the implementation for when you're using session full queues.
Right.
So that and both the message receiver object will get message pump in the next release.
Okay.
So you'll see that. Love any feedback folks have. Message browse. So this is a feature lots of folks have asked for from a debugging and monitoring perspective. I just want to go browse through my messages, see what's going on,
awesome.
Right?
Awesome.
Yeah. It's in there. It's finally there. It returns all the message properties and body. Right. No filtering, no nothing. So it counts as a message operation from a billing perspective. And you look at the API, we've kept it very, very consistent from a symmetry perspective.
Okay.
So instead of peak lock a message, you just do peak.
Okay.
And the key difference being the message is not locked. Anyone else can go do a peak on it and be able to see that message or lock that message for that matter.
So when I peak it, it's not going to, even for that split second that it does to read it, it's not locking it in any way.
Correct. There's just, absolutely no impact.
Yep.
And that's why in debugging and monitoring scenarios, your app could be running end-to-end, messages flowing through it, and you can with full confidence go create a receiver and call peak, peak, peak on it and see the flow of messages without affecting the running app in any way.
Very handy.
Right. And then we have some extensions like from sequence number. If you have a sequence number in the queue where you want to go drop and then you want to do a count for the batch, those extensions are also available.
So you can basically point it at a different place in the queue to read what's there.
So you can go and look at different parts of your queue and look at the back of the queue or the front of the queue, things like that.
Nice.
So with that, let's bring up some code. Let's see, message browse. Okay. So here's the code. I've got a couple of sample queues. Let me bring up Server Explorer, and you can take a look. I've got a few sample queues. And when I look at their properties, hey, they've got a bunch of messages. So here I've got sample 0 has 20, 19, 18. They've got some messages. So what's going on with them? I need to, let's say I need to go take a look. I would go create a messaging factory and then create a receiver. And then in a while loop, I can just call peak.
Right.
So think of peak as your, again, your cursor. When you do peak, you get the first message in the queue. You call peak again, you get the next one.
Okay.
Anytime you want to reset your cursor, either pass in the sequence number or just create a new message receiver
okay.
in a very similar way. And then I just print out what's going on in the message. So let's run this code, see what the deal is. Here are my 20 messages.
Nice.
And now you can see while I did that, I could have gone and looked at properties again in terms of my queue. It still has 20 messages. Nothing's changed here. I can receive a message, and this will go and pull out a message. You know, it will update the count to 19.
Yep.
No messages locked, nothing.
Nice.
And I can continue to work on the queue. So very, very handy for a lot of scenarios.
Yep.
And good feature add.
Yeah, very cool. I'm lacking this.
Cool. So the next one, enable disable options. So you already know you can go to the portal or go in code and go enable or disable a queue, right? We talked about this. There are scenarios where you have multi-tenancy, right? You've got one queue per customer and one of your customers not paying up.
Yep.
You disable their queue. You
know,
they can't send any more messages. They can't receive any more messages. Things like that. So those scenarios had been enabled for some time now. There was this other set of scenarios where you only want to affect one side of the entity.
Yes, you want to still be. So if you're disabling a customer's queue, let me guess if this is it. Because it makes perfect business sense. If you've got a customer and they're not paying, you want to disable them receiving their message, but you still want to get the data that's being pumped in. Otherwise, when you turn
it back on, the customer's going to be, hey, you stopped my service. Like, I didn't get any of that data.
Okay.
Perfect scenario.
Right.
So, exactly. And the same thing in the other side. Let me give you an example for the other side. Let's say you have two systems, right? Let's say you have a legacy system which is pulling messages, and you have a bunch of clients which are pushing messages. You want to take the legacy system offline, right? You want to go service it and things like that. But you have very long-running work. Remember, we support renew lock, right? You have, you can renew your lock, you can continue your work. You don't want to shut down that machine,
right?
You want to really gracefully drain all the work which it is doing. Now, if you go disable the queue, all receive calls will fail, renew lock calls will fail. See, the in-progress messages also will not be able to be processed.
Right.
So here is when you use something called send disabled or receive disabled.
Okay.
When you call receive disabled, what happens is all your send side apps continue to work.
Right.
They're able to send the queue. On your receive side, any messages which the server already has, he can renew a lock, he can complete them, he can process them. But any new receive call yep. will no longer send back a message.
Okay.
So it really helps in those kinds of cases where you want to drain down that processing,
yep.
finish the work, take the server offline, and you know, of course, you're using a queue for decoupling, so your senders keep running, and then you just make the receive enabled, start your server, and you're good to go.
So does it do it as well with no code change for the client or receiver? Like, it's not going to throw an exception of any type, it's just going to...
Absolutely. So you'd see the exact same kind of, exceptions as you would have seen in the case of the entity not, you know, accepting messages or anything like that. So your regular error handling will continue.
Okay.
From a send side, I believe you get a messaging entity disabled exception and things like that.
Cool.
So that's a really good addition. Then the next one is auto-delete. For idle entities. You know where scenarios where you have a lot of dynamic topologies. Mm-hmm. So think of it in this way. Let's say you're writing a game app. And every time you and I start up a chess game, we create a queue for that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can create up to 10,000 queues per namespace, right? So in that sense, from a quota perspective, you want to manage your queues, right? And we see a lot of people write scripts where they check the last access stat times and things like that. And now we've all got that built into the system.
Okay.
So auto delete on idle is just a time span. So like note here, I've set it 30 to 30 minutes. And once you've set that, we'll monitor your queues for you.
Mm-hmm.
Queues, topics, subscriptions, whichever. And anytime we see no operations or no access on those queues for 30 minutes, we'll delete that.
Okay.
So in that way, it gives you this ability to create very dynamic topologies. And also manage your messaging topologies much easier. Because now you can keep expiring old entities. I'll give you another example. People have PubSub, right? Topics and subscription, where every time a worker role comes up, it creates a subscription.
Right.
Now, when the worker role doesn't shut down cleanly or something like that, or the app crashes and they don't have time to clean up, that can be a zombie subscription hanging there.
It's like a lot of Nate's code, actually.
Absolutely. So this feature is dedicated to Nate, where now he can set auto delete on idle, and we will not get rid of the queue. So a couple of good things to notice. For example, take a queue. If you send a message, receive a message, that's an operation. If you have a pending receive on it, that also is an operation. So we will not kill the queue if there is a receiver who's still listening and waiting for that message. So we take care of those scenarios. Yeah. And the same thing applies for topics and subscriptions. Now, the one key thing to note the difference between a topic and subscriptions is, let's say you set auto-delete for 30 minutes on a topic. If for 30 minutes no one sends a message to a topic, the topic is inactive. And you do no metadata operation, like update the topic or change its description or anything like that, then the topic will get deleted. And now subscriptions live only as part of the topic. So in that sense, once your topic gets deleted, all the underlying subscriptions are deleted. But if you set auto-delete property only on subscriptions, then your topic remains and only subscriptions disappear. So that's something to keep in mind.
What's the maximum duration? It said minimum duration 5 minutes.
Maximum duration is anything you said. Time span Maxwell is actually the default. By default, all entities are time span Maxwell. So you can set it to whatever you want in there. Task-based async APIs. So you know we had the whole iAsync result model in there. We've added tasks. All your operations like queue client, create, send, update, everything which we have across the API. Now has async methods which return tasks.
Very easy to read.
So much easier to read, much easier to program with. If you're using .NET 4.0, no worries. Our library still targets .NET 4.0. So you can still use the continue with and all of those kinds of operators. But if you move to .NET 4.5, then as you can see with the await async semantics, makes it really easy. You can write your code much easier.
So I think I covered this in the news a couple weeks back.
We had a blog post, right. So we had put on a beta release of the Duo client with these APIs, a whole chunk of work. So we had blogged about that. Continuing on. So breaking changes, it's 2.0. So, you know, there's a little bit of breaking changes there. I just want to call those out. If you can look here, so right now from an app perspective, API perspective, only if you were using message buffers. which was one of the old sort of volatile technologies, right, which is an in-memory message buffer, which we had. We've removed that. And that had been deprecated some time back. We are working on in-memory volatile kind of messaging offerings. So that will come up a little later. But right now, message buffer has been removed from the API perspective. The other breaking change I want to call out is with Service Bus 1.0 for Windows Server, our on-premise release. With SDK 2.0, we don't have a corresponding on-premise release right now.
Right.
So right now, if you go to SDK 2.0, you use some of the new features and things like that, it won't work against the existing server. Even existing features, we are not able to target.
Okay.
So 1.8 remains completely supported, both from service and server. It's just a metric SDK.
Should we expect sometime in the future there'll be parity between
absolutely. So as we have published even in our release notes, is that it's just a sort of a leapfrog kind of a thing. But every service releases fairly fast at a very high cadence.
Right.
The on-premise releases are a little bit more annual kind of thing. So the next on-premise release will again bring symmetry to the universe.
Okay.
And there'll be server it's the same SDK tag to them. Okay. So right now there's an imbalance in the force. But we'll fix that soon. Auth and security.
Mm.
So I thought we'll talk about this a little bit, where we have a new model, shared access signature. Mm-hmm. Hopefully folks are familiar with this. I think it's storage folks have been using this for a very long time. We have a deep ACS integration, where you can use ACS service identities and stuff to manage your objects. Now we've added the more lightweight, you know, shared access signature kind of thing. So now you get to configure your own rules, the sort of the SAS rules, at namespace level or at entity level.
Okay.
So if you do something at the namespace level, it will apply to all the entities.
Right.
Or if you do at an entity level, then it just applies to that queue or that topic. Right now, we don't have rules for subscription level, but that's something which we are working on. We got feedback from folks already that they would like, on a per-subscription basis, be able to set their rules. So we'll work on that. So what does a SAS authorization rule look like? It consists of four things: key name, rights, primary, secondary key.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're always familiar, you just use the primary key most of the time, right? That's what you use. And then someday when you decide, hey, I want to roll this, you move the primary to the secondary, and you create a new primary key.
Mm-hmm.
And what that lets you do is essentially keep your existing clients running and then start sharing the new clients and things
and
like
that. And no downtime.
And no downtime for folks. So the very same model which is there. And then the way you compute your SAS signature is the URI of the resource and the expiry of the expiry and the primary key.
Okay.
So to show that, let's actually jump back to some code. So let me show you what I'm doing here. I'm going to create a key name and a key. And the reason we have the name is because we allow you up to 12 authorization rules per entity.
Okay.
So the way you identify a particular rule is with its name.
Right.
So that's what the key name is.
Yeah.
And then with the key, we've also given you this helper method, because you need to generate a sort of 64 base 64, key. With enough length, we just generate a random key for you.
Okay.
You can use this method, you can use any other key generator, anything's fine. Any of the regular rules apply. And then when you're creating a new queue, here I create the queue description, note I'm creating a new shared access authorization rule, giving it the key name, the actual key which I generated here, and then whatever access rights.
Okay.
Makes sense. So here I've generated it with send and listen writes.
Right.
So once I have done that, I'll just check if my queue exists. If it is, I'll update it. Once I have done that, then note what is the kind of code I need to write to both send and receive those messages. First, I create the service URI, which is just sort of core to my namespace.
All right.
And then I create the token provider from the shared access signature token provider.
Mm-hmm.
And note the key things I'll need here are the key name and the key.
Okay.
Those are the two things.
Right.
And that's it. At that point, I have enough information to then create my messaging factory, and I can create senders and receivers from that messaging factory.
So this is a good example sort of all the code end to end, but typically would you find that, you know, if someone's building a solution where they have you know, they control the service tier,
right,
and the service bus, then everything up until just, well, creating the token provider and the SaaS, that's done in the service tier.
Side. That will all be on
and
the
it
service
returns
side.
It back to the client.
And then somehow you'll have to take the send key,
yep,
and the name and then, mm-hmm, give it to your, you know, yep, client in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then all your service or your client side,
yep,
will be using this code.
Yep.
Absolutely,
okay,
right.
Cool.
So the code on top is for management. So,
yep,
here, note, we are still using ACS auth. We've got our connection string and stuff.
Yep.
And I'm doing management type operations,
okay,
which is going and updating the queue and stuff. Now, there's nothing limiting me from doing these operations using SAS keys too,
mm-hmm,
but then I'll need namespace level SAS keys.
Yes.
Right? Because then under namespace level, I'm creating a queue,
right,
and doing an update. So here's the code. Let's look at it in action. Let's actually see what's going on. So I'm actually going to go here first, and I'm going to delete this queue. And then let's run F5. So the code ran till here, and you can see now I have my queue object. And in that, I've got all the different items, including my authorization rule.
Mm-hmm.
And notice the key which it generated. This was the random generated,
right,
key which it got. And now, of course, I'll check if the queue exists or not. Let me run till here now. And if not, it will go create the queue and then, yeah, come to the runtime path. So now in the runtime path, again, it uses that same key,
mm-hmm,
and the key name, and it creates, using this service URI value, a messaging,
yep,
factory.
And you're passing in the token provider there.
And there I'm passing in the SaaS token provider,
right,
in there, which you do token provider.create.
Mm-hmm.
And now hitting F5 on that, you can see I have full permissions to set as well,
yep,
as to browse messages.
Okay.
Now let's change something here. Let's say I go update my rule and give myself only listen rights.
All right.
So I've removed all send rights. Now note,
okay,
I'm going to use this very same queue.
All right.
But the fact that I'm using the same authorization rule name,
all right,
that is what will be used in this case.
Okay.
So I'm going to hit F5 again. And this time it will go generate a new key. Because I'm using the same rule name,
mm-hmm,
it has now updated that.
Right.
And now so what happens is...
Sorry, does that replace the old rule then?
Yes.
Since you're using the same
since
name?
I'm using, good, the same name, right?
Yep.
So you've got a,
okay,
replaced rule. I could have changed the rule name,
yep,
and added a new rule.
Mm-hmm.
And like we said, we have, support up to 12 rules, which,
right,
you can create in there. Now I run this, and now after that you'll see, though I can create the sender and receiver, when I actually try to send a message...
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm not able to anymore.
Yep.
I don't
very
have
cool
the permissions at all. Not cool if you're denied, but yes, it works. So now I'm going to skip up and say I do the same code I should have done a catch there. Let me quickly come up, same code, don't do the send message, hit F5, and now you'll see when I come to actually browsing messages,
mm-hmm, you can still do that.
Thing works as a charm.
Awesome. So with storage, they've got the concept of policy,
mm-hmm,
that you can revoke. Is that similar in this case? Like, is there a revoke mechanism other than just creating a new policy with the same name?
Right, right. So you should think of that exactly,
yeah,
in a symmetric way. You've got a rule,
yeah,
a SAS rule, what we call,
mm-hmm,
which says, this is the rule name, this,
right,
is its key, and these,
mm-hmm,
are the permissions,
right,
it has. You can update the rule,
mm-hmm,
which says you use the same name and you maybe change the,
right,
permissions which it has. Or you update the rule and change the key itself. Well,
okay,
the moment you change the key, anyone else who has old key,
yep,
values, they're no longer being able to,
okay,
run, right? So, you know, in my sample, it's,
yep,
a very simplistic sample,
mm,
for that case. Or think of it as you can add new rules.
Right.
So you can say, okay, all my existing folks are using this.
Mm-hmm.
I can create another listen key or another send key and,
okay,
use it for a different scenario, go roll that, and then I can remove my rule.
All right.
Similar in nature to that. So really quickly, just an overview of SAS. Lots more coming up here. We've got some good documentation and
right,
stuff out there. and you'll see more samples.
Okay, very nice. Out.
So the last thing I want to do for today is quickly show you some of the portal updates. We've got some new exciting features in the portal. So here I'm just logged in as myself. I'm going to click Service Bus and choose, let's say, my demo namespace. Here I've got all my queues, topics, relays, notification hubs all listed. I'm going to pick one of the queues which I know has been doing a lot of work. Here's a good one. Queue length of 55. Oh, wow. That's about 500,000 messages right there.
556,000. Yeah.
It's been busy. Wow. Okay, here it is. This is what it's been doing in the last 30 days.
All right.
So here the key thing to note is, look at what I have shown here. We give you how many server busy errors you got.
Right.
So that's the throttling kind of thing. Successful operations, total errors.
All right.
So you can note here we had, you know, total 3 errors here, and you got 7 server busy kind of operations in my last 30 days of work. And here again, you'll see, hey, I got some more service busy kind of throttling. So now we're giving you a lot of key metrics, along with the you know, the length and outgoing, ingoing messages stuff which we had earlier available, to really help you monitor and see what's going on with your entities. So here you can see, you can really, really calculate and say, hey, how often do I get throttled? Right. What are the errors which I'm seeing? And you get that very good insight into how your app.
So key performance counters, which you
key performance need. Counters for that are all there.
So is the throttle, are the throttle limits published? So where you would have got the
Right. So in general, throttle, it's a multi-tenant system, you know, in that sense. So how hard your queue is pushing and overall what is the system sort of availability. We could have sometimes data layer updates going on, in which case we have to slow down, you know, the traffic kind of thing. So there are a plethora of things which can cause throttling.
Yep.
Most of the time, as you can see, you know, from here, it's a very rare kind of occurrence unless your application is running right at the boundary.
Right.
And that is where we definitely recommend that you start sharding across queues. And you should do sharding for both getting more throughput as well as getting higher availability. Because if you think of from the cloud, you know, scale out perspective, the more entities you spread your load across, you'll first be able to push more you know, traffic and load. But along with that, you'll also have more availability because not everything will be unavailable at the same time. So that's definitely something.
So for a single queue, is it 2,000, I think?
So right now, published numbers are about 2,000 messages per second.
And per namespace?
Per namespace, we don't have a hard throttle. It's more about a Uber sort of, you know, there's some limits there.
Okay.
But most of them are on a per entity basis.
So the key guidance is if they need more than, you know, around 2,000 a second, fan out across multiple queues.
Right, right. So if you want performance, let's say, you'd anyway, maybe even at 1,000, you want to move into more.
Yep.
Let's say you even are doing 100 messages a second.
Right.
From an availability perspective, using two queues helps you.
Yep.
Right? Because if one of the queues down for maintenance, the other queue can still be used and things like that.
Awesome.
So you want to shard across that.
Cool.
So that's one. The one more thing in the portal is the configure tab. So all the properties which you have now, earlier on, you just were able to do that at create time.
Okay.
Well, now you can go update them. So all that is available. Let's say I go change for this queue, I change the queue state. Remember the states we talked about?
Yes.
You know, send, disable, disable.
Very nice. I can choose within the portal.
Right. So they're all available in the portal. They are very key IT pro sort of management or DevOps scenarios to do that. And I can go hit save.
Okay.
And I'm done for that queue. Let me actually go.
What are you processing in that queue, by the way? Or was putting in and not processing?
I know. So this is a test which I'm running.
Okay.
Now it's probably more than 30 days. That's why you see that traffic in there. But I'm obviously not processing enough because I'm accumulating a lot of messages.
Okay.
So here I can go and change some property, hit save. It will go update the and make any changes needed. There, worked. So those are the updates which we had from the portal. I do want to call out that our management API, the namespace level API, both where you get operations like create a namespace using your management cert or create namespace level SAS rules and things, as well as get this KPI data. Let's say you want to write your own management tool, or you want to write your own monitoring tool where you want to say successful operations, unsuccessful operations. They're all available from our management API.
Ah, very
cool. And we've got that documented. We'll include a link for that on this. And we have some samples for that coming soon. So anything you can do from the portal, the key thing to know is you can do it, you know, using your own API.
Yep.
And go from there, from Service Bus.
Cool. A bunch of resources.
We've got the release notes for SDK, what's new. We'd love to hear feedback. We're both on Twitter. Reach out. So, you know, anything you want to know more about these features, or you have any, you know, stuff to tell us, we'd love to hear.
Is it possible we can share a link to this PowerPoint so people can download it for these links at
Absolutely.
The end?
Absolutely. Okay. I'll put it up on that. So we'll
awesome.
Put this out there.
Well, thank you. It's always a pleasure having you on the show, Abhishek.
Thank you, Nick.
You always come with good news for us.
Service Bus is always busy, chugging away new features, you know, updating old features, making things easier.
Yep.
And what keeps us driving is, you know, feedback from you, feedback from the community. So
I think we should get your Twitter alias if people want to reach out to you.
My Twitter alias is Abhishek R. Lal. So reach out on that.
Okay, and of course you can tweet to Cloud Cover Show or Cloud Nick. And that's basically the show for today. So I hope you've enjoyed watching, and thanks once again for coming on, Abhishek.
Thank you.